You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Another busy week in Welsh rugby. We've had the Welsh derbies. We've had the Premiership Cup, the mighty Newport winning that, of course. And what else have we got to talk about, Murph? We've got some transfer news. And I think you want to get us underway with a bit of a rant at our previous co-presenters, don't you?
Yeah. The so-called rugby fans who were messaging to say, oh, I can't watch any rugby this week. I'm in somewhere peddling around on a bicycle. I can't do it this week.
I know.
I'm visiting the pencil museum in Bishop Stortford. You know, that the excuses are flying in from those two, I can tell you. Oh. And I'm here grafting at this all the time. Mind you, which probably just tells you how much lack of a social life I got, I suppose, more than anything else.
Well, yeah, it does, but you're right. I'm glad you got that one off your chest. I'm gonna have serious words with Killick, like, the forgotten man.
I'll have to tell him off air that you prompted me though. To I said I'm going to start abuse. He said, "Do it now, go."
I said, "Yeah, do it now, do it on air." But anyway, we hope to get our learned friends back on this soon. But it's me and you again, Murph, and we've had a couple of eventful derbies, as eventful as dead rubber Pro 14 derbies go. I tell you what, I did find though watching these ones is I found it did feel like they were derby games. Whereas, you know, when we were in the midst of the Rainbow Trout Cup this time last year, and we'd all play, you know, it was just like every other week. It was, it's more COVID, another round of derbies. And it feels like at least the scarcity of them this year has made it a bit more of an occasion to both of those. And it helped. There were, you know, some half decent weather in Wales. So, you know, it was an ideal scenario to be out having a pint in the sun.
Yeah. And last week you threw up an upset, you know, in the track, as well documented on this very podcast last week. I still think that was coming because of the way they played in South Africa, the Dragons. They were hopelessly outgunned, but they were showing attacking shape that they don't normally show. And then when their forwards played really well, that was the cue for a victory. And it was probably too much to ask for them to back it up this week. But
should have won that game, Murph.
Sorry?
I honestly think they should have won that game this week.
Well, they fluffed their lines early on, didn't they?
Fluffed their lines early on. You know,
I had a nickname.
Bertrano.
Yeah, I had a nickname for him, yeah. It'll come to me. Yeah, anyway, he was through, wasn't he, and dropped it in the first 10 minutes. And
It's just one of those. You've just got to take that and score. It's, you know, international scrum half. He's run the right line. The ball was good enough to snatch, and he's in under the post. You know, you score that one. There was another one, I think. You know, there were various opportunities where we were in their 22, and you know, we fumbled at Sayuli, knocked the ball on, looking for a quick pick and go, and things like that.
Yeah,
and you find yourself 17-0 down.
Exactly, all the handling headers seem to be in attacking positions in the opposition 22. So it's a lack of, you know, that's a lack of composure, or just, you know, like a bit of white line fever, maybe, where you're kind of a side that's not used to being in those situations on a regular basis. You just kind of fluff it. And I suppose if they keep playing in this form, then eventually those things will stick, you know. But Scarlets kind of just... I, even though they were getting battered early on, they and obviously Newport wasted a few chances, They didn't look like they were panicking at any time, and when their chances came, they took most of them, and that showed in the final score.
Yeah, it did, and it was disappointing. I also thought, again, well, you know, we'll get a quick refereeing grievance out of the way. Not that this is the reason that we didn't win, because we had enough chances to win anyway, but I thought he completely bottled that Steph Evans one. It looked like a knock-on to me. You can show it's like one of that bullshit Nick Tompkins one in the Australia game. You know, if you can try and tell me that ball went backwards, I'm not having it. He bottled it because he was on a second yellow, and he was going to send someone off for two, you know, deliberate knock-ons. Which I just thought the ref completely bottled his lines there.
I came in and watched it late last Friday night, so I was speed watching, and I at the time I had forgotten that he was on his second yellow, so yeah. I didn't quite grasp the gravity of the bottling out. That's interesting. Yeah, referees don't like that, do they?
No, it's just like, you know, I just think with this there is far too much, what's the word, subjectivity with these rugby things. Me and Steph were talking about it last week with the, you know, mitigation around head injuries. Like, that's just got to be clear cut, you know, that if it's a dangerous tackle to the head, and, you know, there's a clear difference between the Jonathan Davis one last week where, he almost took Josh Lewis's head off, again, not maliciously, and then something like the Gareth Davis one that's just a simple high tackle and, you know, Bertrand went down like a footballer. But there's just too much, you know, there's too much kind of mitigation with some of these decisions. And I think deliberate knock-ons, it's just really, really simple. If there's an overlap and you knock the ball on, or you go for an intercept and it doesn't come off, you're going to get binned. Like Owen Lane hit the ball up, he had a half-decent chance of getting it, he didn't get it, therefore he's off. It's simple as that. And I, you know, watching that replay, the ball looked like it went forward to me, and yeah, I don't know, just thought he bottled it. But anyway, nonetheless, the Dragons had more than enough chances to get a lead early on. They fluffed their lines and they were 17-0 down. And we're, I don't know, I find we're back in the position where we were in 12 months ago, where they finished the season quite strongly but didn't have enough to get over the line in a lot of these games. So it has to change at the start of next season. Otherwise, Dean Ryan's going to be under a lot of pressure. But that said, the last 3 weeks have been three really good performances, generally.
Yeah, and of course, there's, as we mentioned briefly off air, the signings to come in as well. I've forgotten his name already, so good.
Tompkinson.
The latest signing from
New Zealand.
Yeah.
It's Tompkinson, I think his name is.
Oh, sorry. His first name's
Co.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah,
wow, I didn't realize. I saw the montage of his play, and I didn't click that he had a
anglicised surname,
a British surname. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that seems like a really a really exciting one. You know, Super Rugby experience. It's got to all click quite early next season, but. Generally speaking, the last three games have been so much more positive than the rest of the season that I don't know. God, it's the hope that kills you. But
well, look, some of the existing squad, I think, are in really good form. You know,
they are. Yeah,
just not enough as a team to make a bigger impact. But with the players they've signed, you know, it's quite a broad. You know, it's O'Hanrahan and. The second row Saunders, this is that his name?
Lonsdale,
and then the CEO Tompkinson, and what have you. You've got to be positive with the way that, you know, again, it hasn't showed up in results, but you've got to be positive with the way they're playing and what's coming in. The only negative that I was going to mention off air earlier is Jonah Holmes.
Yeah. It's been a real. Well, not a puzzler. I think obviously we talked about it in the autumn. He was in red hot form, was overlooked for Wales, and that's the reason he's here.
No.
That's the reason he's here was to try and stay in the national side. And to be fair, he has not looked the same player since the autumn and not getting a sniff.
No. He hasn't been on the pitch much.
No, he hasn't. It's probably the best for all parties. But it's a real shame, because if we could have got going, I think he when he's playing his best rugby, he's a massive asset to the Dragons, and he could be a massive asset to Wales. So it's a real puzzler, that one.
Yeah, and he's one of those that was caught in the pay scheme that the Dragons are only paying 20% of his wages. So it's a financial blow as well, because obviously the guy they bring in now, they probably have to pay 100%, whoever covers
well,
that.
Loss. I mean, essentially, you know, kind of Tonkinson, I guess, has come in as as a back. Maybe he's replacing Roberts rather than that. But yeah, you're right, absolutely. Obviously, it makes it a difficult one to juggle financially. But
yeah, juggle the budget.
All in all, squad looks stronger. Performances are improving, but it's got to manifest itself into something meaningful at the start of next season. You know, we can't just be saying, "Oh, didn't quite have enough." I know it's difficult with the playing budget that they've got, but now that it feels like going into next season, that is Dean Ryan's squad, and you would hope at the very least that they can be incredibly fit and disciplined and well drilled in certain aspects, because that's what you kind of expect from Dean Ryan's sides. So if they come out of the season with that, you know, with that in mind, and they have shown a lot more of that in recent weeks, then at least it gives you a reason to think, well, we're not going to get thumped all the time, and to be honest, that's kind of that would be an improvement on the bulk of this season.
Yeah, I just going briefly onto the Scarlets. I think last time I was on, I said they were the best region, and then they lost to the Dragons straight away, just to shut me up. But I think the way they came back this week, and they're generally overall play compared to the other three, I think they are the best region at the moment, and only probably Ospreys at home, you know, would be a definite tricky one for them. We know Cardiff got spanked by Scarlets twice, so that would be the only hard game from a regional opposition at the moment for Scarlets is Ospreys.
They've got 22 players out injured at the moment as well, actually. So there's quite a lot of you know, they've got the biggest squad, but that is the there's an awful lot of injuries within that. I thought they won that game quite. Even though I say the Dragons should have won it, it never really felt like they had to dig too deep, I don't think, the Scarlets. You know, they like we say, went 17-0 up really pretty easily. Yeah. But I think there's some encouraging things in there, not just for Scarlets, but for Wales fans as well. I mean, the pass for, I can't remember, it was Baldwin who went over. It was a beautiful pass from Patchell for a try for him out wide on the right. And there was another from Johnny Williams as well, just, you know, real great precision. And I think there's definitely a couple of things in there that I think should encourage Wales fans as well as Scarlets fans in that back line.
Yeah, and I wang on about it all the time, but I just love to see Patchell on, you know, have a proper run of games. He came back on the South African tour, just disappeared again. I don't know if there was some niggle there to clear up, or I didn't hear anything, but the more time he spends on the pitch, the better, obviously much better for the Scarlets. But I think he might be the most creative option for Wales now, if he can run himself into a long run of games and be the kind of backup to either first choice or backup to bigger off the bench. Obviously, there's three tests against the Box in June. Is it June or July?
June, I think.
Yeah. I just love to see him go right through the end of the season into those three games and not have any issues, because he does seem to be one of those players who does need to play himself back into form. And like some boys these days, they just hit the ground running, you know. I've got all my fingers and toes crossed for Rhys Patchell, because he's obviously not a youngster anymore either. So if he doesn't get back to his best soon and get back into the Welsh setup, it might, you know, time's going to slip by before you know it. So
yeah, I think he's definitely, like you say, I think he's definitely the best running option at 10. undoubtedly, that Wales have. And, you know, obviously bigger brings other qualities. And I think he's still the best 10 in terms of overall international quality. But in terms of a player who's going to open things up and really kind of get a backline moving, I think Patchell is that best option if he can stay fit and get a run of games.
He puts serious pace on his passes. Like the cameramen are struggling to keep up if they're not on a wide angle, a wide shot. They're having to really throw the camera around to keep up with the speed of the ball. It's thrilling to see him back in that kind of mode, if you know what I mean. Just really distributing the ball hard, and it makes a massive difference to, especially to Scarlett, but any side. Because, as we know, they've been using a lot of Dan Jones and what have you over the last year or so. And chalk and cheese having, you know, no disrespect to Dan Jones. Chalk and cheese having Reece Patchell there, just on distribution alone, you know.
It is. I think Costello's done his cause of long-term Wales ambitions no harm this these last couple of games. I think he would, if everyone's fit at the Scarlets, I would say it's Patchell and Costello are the two best tens there.
Oh yeah,
and you know he's obviously got a lot of improving to do, Costello as well, just through match experience and game management and all those kind of things. But he's I think that things are looking a bit more encouraging for them at 10. And but it's just you're right, it just all hinges on Patchell being fit, because he is the, you know, he's like the kind of the nerve centre of that back line. It's just he can turn the tempo up and down really, really easily. And yeah, just like you, would love him to stay fit and get a chance playing a bit more in the Red of Wales.
It's pushing on, well, it probably is 2.5-3 seasons since he's been in regular rugby, if you know what I mean, week in, week out. He hasn't done it. Yeah. I think he might have been injured before 2019 World Cup as well.
Yeah, I think he was.
Back in shortly before the World Cup and into the squad. So he's had really disrupted career, you know, for quite a number of seasons. So I just, like nearly every player around, I just hope he has a clean run of games. I said the same thing about Jordan Williams this season. He's never there week in, week out. He just, something about his physique, he just can't do it. It's not selection. I think he would get selected. And obviously,
no, he's injured all the time, isn't he?
Yeah, and obviously Reece Patchell, if fit, would just be, in some respects, first name on the team sheet for the Scarlets. I suppose it just goes to show how demanding it is at that level to turn out week after week with all the conditioning as well on top. And when players can do it, the sort of boys who are just, for example, Alan Wynn this weekend's done his 250th Ospreys game, works out 450 first-class matches or something that he's played. When he
staggering,
did
really,
all his Wales internationals, yeah. And then his other games that he's played. So you're in different era, obviously, but you're in the territory of some of the players from the old days who just played for their club for 20 years at a high level. So, you know, like at your club, Muddy Waters and Reece Morgan and all them, all 700 games and all that kind of thing. It's on a par with that. And it just goes to show some players are just, apart from being amazing at rugby, they got the durability, which is worth as much as the ability on top again, if you know what I mean.
So, yeah, absolutely. And talking of injuries and second rows, and to bring it back to the Scarlets, I think I think he picked up man of the match yesterday. But Sam Lousy was fantastic for them. I think he's been their quite possibly their best player all season, or certainly their most influential player. I think when he's on the park, he makes a huge difference for them.
I think Steph said last week he's the best second row player in Wales.
I think he did say that.
Yeah. Current form, he'd have to be, wouldn't he? I mean, one or two pushing him close, you know, Will Rowlands and what have you. But yeah. Alan Wynn hasn't been on the pitch enough to challenge that. So, he makes a huge, I mean, he's obviously a great player, but he makes a huge difference to Scarlets if he's not in the side. There's not a lot, you know, outside of that's not insulting anyone, but his performances are so strong that when he's not there, you really notice that he's missing. So, yeah, great signing.
Yeah, I think he's been superb. And again, you know, he's got the brilliant, flashy ball in one hand, offloads, and, you know, that Harlem Globetrotters try from five yards out. You know, he's keeping the ball in one hand, and that's all brilliant and eye-catching. But he does the nuts and bolts really well, carries hard, he tackles really hard, smokes people at rucks. You know, he's got everything you want in an Islander second row, hasn't he? And I think he's been fantastic for them, and it's those kind of players, that those top quality foreign non-Welsh qualified players that can just make you, if you get it right. Yeah, I think, like we were saying, I can't remember if it was with you or Steph, we were saying recently, but you know, like the era when Cardiff had Ben Blair and Paul Tito and that quality of player who were going to be in the side week in, week out, and improving the others around them, Zavrush, those kind of players. Mm. I think it just makes a huge difference. Likewise, the Ospreys, you know, the Tiers and Marty Holler and Marshall and those kind of players. It's more difficult now financially to find that calibre of player, but it just shows how important it is in your recruitment to get it right when it comes to the non-Welsh qualified players.
Yeah, I definitely think it's an issue with, Cardiff, because those players you mentioned earlier, they just raise everyone else's standards, and they, by being relentlessly good and consistent all the time, everyone else kind of gets behind that, and there's no one inspiring that at Cardiff. I'm picking them out because they're so inconsistent at the moment. There's no one inspiring that at Cardiff, and I kind of feel sorry for the coaches, because they're just sort of running around stamping out fires, but their coach, I assume, because the defeat to the Ospreys this weekend, they I don't know if anyone else noticed, but their clearing out of the ruck was really impressive and effective. But this week, unlike their previous game, their hands had gone to shit. So every time they made a break, James Ratty made a really good break and just completely fluffed his pass to Thomas Williams. And there was a few occasions, well, numerous occasions of just handling errors and not necessarily a massive amount of pressure. And so now, I mean, whoever runs the session is going to just make them do 2-on-1s or 3-on-2s. For hours on end, and then next week something else will go wrong, like the set piece will start to wobble. So I think it's partly due to the makeup of the squad, and partly due because you haven't got like any quality talisman there to inspire everyone around them.
Yeah, it's tricky. Just before we go to a break, it is tricky because, again, they have been, you know, you look at someone like Lilo, I think, you know, Lilo would be in that kind of bracket of how, I mean, he must have been there 5 or 6 seasons now. And again, hugely consistent performer. But outside of that, am I missing anyone who's really kind of...
Well, Willis is an import, really, but he's naturalised now.
Well, Willis is one of ours, isn't he? So
yeah, but he was an import initially for the first three seasons. And it's just that you would have also had then top quality international forwards, you know, like a former All Black, for example, and they just can't afford them. It's not that they can't afford them. Well, it is that they can't afford them. But what I mean is that the draw is the English Premiership and the top 14, or the big spending Irish provinces. So that, you know, even the bargain basement ones get hoovered up by Italian clubs and Scottish clubs. Yeah. And, you know, and I've said before on here that the English Premiership is like a South African academy, because it's just some matches, honestly, it's a joke. There's like 7 for sale. There's like 7 South African forwards on the pitch, and plus Bevan Rod. Do you know Bevan Rod?
Yeah.
That's
right,
Lou said, really impressive player. I've heard 2 different stories from commentators about where he's from. The first one I heard, he was from the Isle of Man. And then the second time I heard, he was Scottish. So I don't know where he's actually from, but he's an amazing player. Shape-wise, he looks like Morgan Morris, especially the way he's over the ball all the time at the breakdown. But yeah, there was a game, I can't remember which, who Sale were playing against, but there was a game where he was the only non-South African in the Sale pack. And then, of course, there was more South Africans on the bench. So that's another reason why there's no decent foreigners going spare for the Welsh regions.
Well, with that wage cap coming down in the Premiership as well, you'd expect over the course of the season. But then they'll just all end up in France.
Ireland, yeah. Well, Sale are losing their two biggest names. They're losing Titi Pfaff and the Lighthouse Lou Diaga. They're both going to Japan. Mm. Hopefully, eventually, if anyone else gets cut, they'll be available. I can't see anyone dying to come and play at Cardiff, can you?
Not right now. I mean, the draw is, but then again, you know, like we said, I know they're not world beaters coming in at the Dragons necessarily, but they've recruited better than a side who've not won a game at home all season and have barely won away. Mm. So I don't know. There must always be, and it's not like they're cashing huge checks to do it.
Yeah.
So Dean Ryan must have some photos of these players or some seriously good chat.
Well, I've already heard opposition fans on Twitter calling the Dragons big spenders because they've signed 34-year-old JJ Hanrahan.
He's not that old.
Yeah. No, I know. I just like to.
But he seems like it as well, doesn't he? He seems like he's been around forever, Hanrahan. Mm. But I think he might even be shy of 30, I think. But anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll have a look at the detail at the woes of Cardiff and a win for the Ospreys. And we'll wrap up a few other bits and pieces as well. But first, we're going to take this quick break. Right, Murph, time for the second half. And let's get the microscope out again. It's time to look at the most inconsistent side in Wales right now, Cardiff. In fact, let's talk about the Ospreys first, because it feels like it's been 6 months since I've spoken about the Ospreys on this. They haven't been playing many games, and then I seem to keep missing the games that they've been playing in as well. The last time I remember them playing was in South Africa against the Sharks or something. I can't remember if that's actually their last game or not.
That was the thing.
A good win for them, though.
Well, when they came back from that mini tour, all the other regions went straight into matches, and the Ospreys seemed to have a nice little break after it. So,
I think these were the postponed COVID Christmas derbies, weren't they? But then, surely the Ospreys would have been a part of that. And then you had some European rugby as well, didn't you? With Dragons and Dragons playing a dead rubber against Gloucester, and
of course, and Cardiff at Saturday. That explains it.
Maybe that's part of it. But anyway, nonetheless, again, they're a side who've been up and down throughout this season, and when they win, it looks like that, doesn't it? It's gritty, take some chances, keep the scoreboard ticking over. You know, it's not spectacular, explosive rugby, but it can be really, really effective. If they played like that most weeks, then you'd have to think that the Ospreys had really had something good to build on going into next season.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised when I looked at their front five. I fancied them to just beat down on Cardiff, but it didn't actually work out like that initially. They got on top eventually, but the Cardiff scrum went quite well early on.
Our hip got the better of Gareth Thomas a couple of times, didn't he?
Thomas wasn't dominant as he normally is in the scrum. So, it was a bit of a surprise early on. But the other thing with the Ospreys is Gareth Anscombe is just a shadow of his former self.
He's not playing badly, but he just looks like a kicking 10 now, doesn't he? He looks like Steve. He plays the same way as Stephen Myler does when he plays. Mm. You know, there's no... he used to have just that little bit of... that little bit of gas to get away, or a little show and go to get through a gap. And
he hasn't kicked on from September. When he came back in September, and was like, "Oh, I hope he's okay." Yeah. And he's been on the pitch fairly regularly, but he hasn't kind of He hasn't. Everyone imagined he was playing himself back into the sport after such a long time out, but he hasn't progressed. It doesn't seem to me anyway. He hasn't progressed since his comeback games much. So hopefully,
which again is understandable given the horrific nature of the injury. But you really hope that there is a bit more around the corner. That's, you know, that said, like I said, he did not play badly, but it is like watching a very, very different player.
Yeah. I think back to his best, he would be the answer for Wayne Pivac.
But he was Gatland's first choice 10 going into that World Cup, wasn't he? If he hadn't busted his knee, he would have been playing 10, and
we'd have won the World Cup if he hadn't busted his knee,
and we would have obviously won the World Cup. So that's all that needs to be said about the matter. On the other hand, a player who's had his fair share of injuries and is no spring chicken picked up man of the match again. Reece Webb is just, he's not going to be the long-term solution for Wales anyway. Thomas Williams is, and he had another fine game as well, actually. But I just think he's always pulls out big performances for them. He's had a really good season in a kind of stuttering Ospreys side at times. He's just seems to let them down. He's such an influential player still at this stage in his career.
I think they've relied on him heavily this year because he's been one of the few experienced players who's there all the time. Partly because he's not in the Welsh squad, but partly because he's not injured like Tipps and George and Alan Wynne's been out a lot, and so he's there. It's like an overseas signing because he's just there every week leading the way, and he's still. I assume people who are not particularly a fan of Reece Webb probably say that he's not as quick as he was, or he's not there at his best, but he's still running interceptions from 50, 60 yards and reading games as well as any other nine in the country or in Britain. I'm not against coaches moving on blokes in their 30s. I mean, Gatland used to do it mercilessly to legends of Welsh rugby. So I'm not totally against it, but I just think, well, we've said before, it was too early. And at one stage, the three boys who've been in the Welsh squad recent times, Gareth Davies, Thomas and Kieran Hardy, if they were all in their best form, then you'd say fair enough. But they've all wobbled this year. Kieran Hardy in particular, I would say. Although he did have a great second half against England when he was on the pitch. But for his club, he hasn't been, Steph and Matthew Jones, was it Matthew? Mm. Who said he hasn't had a great season for his club. So there is an argument that it's not as if England had loads of players queuing up behind Danny Kerr. They just kicked him out early and that was the end of that. And we've said before that Pivac obviously just doesn't like Reece Webb, but I don't think any of it you could, obviously he's not as quick as he was 5 years ago, but then none of them are. There's nothing about his play that you could say this is why Pivac is no longer picking Reece Webb.
No, and it's he's not as quick as he was, obviously, as you expect, 33, 34. But at the same time, it's just you're right, he's still got enough gas to run in interceptions. And it's just the playing what's in front of him, which is such a rarity in recent times in Welsh backs. Well, and generally in the professional game, he is always looking at what's going on in front and therefore knows when to give it the show and go, knows when he's got someone on his shoulder, knows how to tie in defenders at the base of the ruck, because he's still such a threat around the fringes. Yeah. His service is good, his box kicking's good. Yeah, just putting aside Wales' ambitions for one point, you're right. He's just been massively influential for the Ospreys.
Yeah, a huge benefit for him not to be involved at any stage this year, because he's there, right through February and March and all through the autumn. So good for them. And I think I don't know if they play Scarlets and Ospreys playing each other before the end of the year. That'd be a good game, I think.
Let's take a look at the upcoming fixtures as well, because again we've got a number of we've got more derbies to get through before the end of the season. Talk amongst yourselves, Murph, won't you?
yeah.
while I dig these out. I think they have still got to play before the end of the season. I also might be completely wrong on that. So
it'd be a good game anyway, because it's the two I mean league position as well, but you know clearly the two strongest regions at the moment. Cardiff have flattered to deceive again, and those two are the better side. So I think at home, Ospreys, a home game for the Ospreys against Scarlets would be a really good match. When I was going to talk amongst myself just now, I was going to mention the cup games at the stadium on SLC today. The first one, the plate was Trabanos Bedwas. Did you see it?
I didn't see that one, no. Trabanos won, though, didn't they?
Yeah, it's a really good finish. Bedwas looked like they won, and it was a late try from Trabanos. But what... I don't know why I'm so chuffed about, but there are actually two sides we've beaten this year at my club. So there's not many fixtures played in the country in the championship where we can say that. And then there was an upset in the cup game as well. Bargoed were well on top, and I actually missed sort of 20 minutes, half hour of the second half, and when I came back, Neath were winning. So it's really good games, I thought. I haven't seen the whole of the Aberavon Newport game yet, though.
Yeah, it's as an occasion as well. It is one of those things. We were talking off air, and we won't have time to go into this tonight, Murph. But about the perennial problem of what do you do with the semi pro clubs? You know, what kind of a competition is right? But it is a real good occasion, the cup final day in Cardiff, and you know. It's got that brilliant element of history and community rugby and three games all on the same day. It's a really good thing, but it's how it ties in with the professional game is that conundrum that if there was someone who could solve that, then they could command an almighty whack of money from from the WRU to do it.
Well, I think they hope it's Nigel Walker.
Well, I think they do, but. Yeah, interesting this week. You know, like you were saying, there was an expected announcement about a reshaping of the Premiership that never materialised. So we'll have to wait a little bit longer to see what that entails, and if it is the cutting down to nine sides, as was kind of much mooted this week.
Yeah. It looks like that's what's going to happen, but because there's been no official announcement from the WRU, we don't know the criteria of the makeup of those nine. Well, the word is two from each region plus RGC, but how do they choose the two from each region? Because obviously in some regions there's three or even four clubs that might be eligible to be in the Premiership, and so they've got to choose two from each, and based on what. And it's also then, as we were saying off air, it's quite it's a bit of an existential crisis involved there, because for some clubs, because Swansea, for example, if they're not selected, they'll be in the Championship, and then as Yestin will often say, there's not enough Swansea in the Ospreys. Yeah. So they just a huge club like Swansea could end up being also runs in Welsh rugby. Obviously, promotion is still open to them, you know, in the fullness of time, but that's not guaranteed. So
it's been a good season in the Premiership this year as well, I think. And I'm not just well. It was going really well for Newport until a couple of weeks ago. But I think, like, you know, just like kind of establishing that big Thursday night game on S4C has been a shot in the arm for it. And I found myself watching more this year than I have done in previous years.
Yeah, and the streaming, even if it's not live on S4C, they're streaming on Facebook or YouTube or something. And, it's good. And you do see, like, boys on the way up and boys on the way down whenever you watch, you know, that level. And guys who have been, what I like about watching, say, Pontypridd or something, there's guys who've been there for literally 10 seasons and more.
Richellard and players like that.
Yeah, yeah. And Dicomedes, is it?
Yeah,
is
that guy? Dicomedes, yeah.
Yeah, that crowd, you know, they're proper, you know, lifelong players in that side. And I like to see stuff like that. But
I do, but whether or not it's the right thing for feeding the regions and creating the next generation of professional players off the conveyor belt. It's, you know, again, we have nowhere near enough time for that because I've got a curry in the oven.
Or enough information. we just literally don't know how they're going to work it. I'm not against condensing the number of teams because they should condense the quality. You know, there'd be, you know, less semi-pro players washing around in the Premiership, and therefore should only the best ones will be getting picked. So that should make it better quality. But how they would choose the size is just it might just, like we said off air, might just go on finishing position at the end of next season.
Yeah, I mean it's not exactly ideal to be having this discussion in late April as well.
No, you know, that's like it's like discussing the regional team budgets in late April, which they still don't know for next year.
I know this is it, isn't it? It's like I did have a little wry smirk when you mentioned the word existential crisis. I was like, oh, it's been a good 20 minutes since we've had an existential crisis, isn't it?
Yeah,
it just goes hand in hand with Welsh rugby, doesn't it? Every week there is something else, but that just comes back to we've never been set up for professional rugby. There's not the resources in the country to go round to be competitive at the level that we would love. You know, it would be amazing if we could have a version of the club rugby that we enjoyed prior to professionalism, but it's you know, it's never going to happen, and we can barely put together functioning regions, pro clubs, whatever you want to see. But there has to be a realization from the WRU at some point that you've either got to invest in them, or someone has to invest in them, in order for them to be competitive, and you've got to figure out what to do with the Premiership. Because how many times has it been reshaped since we've been doing this show? You know, there's been various different guises of it. So a hell of a lot to think about. Let's hope Nigel Walker and his brains trust have got something up the sleeve.
Well, look, that's I think the main thing, because obviously these topics get really messy on Twitter and Welsh Rugby Twitter and what have you. But the reason why it's contentious and there's no obvious answer is because it's complicated. As we've been over many times, setting up regional rugby was complicated. You know, it was really hard because the country is, the population is all crowded into the southeast mainly. 2/3 of the population live in the southeast Wales, and so it's so hard to regionalise anything like that around in this neck of the woods. And something had to be done because all the clubs were going bust at the time. You know, no one could afford. The thing is with a professional rugby team is, like, some of the small professional football teams, they probably only got 20 players on their books, you know, and a couple of academy boys. If you want to run a proper full-time top-level rugby team, you probably need 40 professional players. Because especially with the churn in leagues like the Gallagher Premiership, the amount of impact and the sheer number of fixtures. So you can't, you know, you've got to have shed loads of money. And we this area just doesn't generate enough to do that. So that's why we are where we are with four regions that lots of people just hate. even probably parts of the WRU, and certainly the people who get to vote, the clubs, that get to vote on decisions that affect those regions all hate them, and that's why we are where we are with professional rugby in Wales at the moment.
Well, if you've got any answers, send them on a postcard.
Yeah, or, small postcard. Yeah,
tweet them to us. Actually, no, please don't tweet them to us. Enough madness goes on Welsh Rugby Twitter without firing up that debate. But that'll do us for this week, Murph. Good to catch up with you, as always. Hopefully we'll be seeing some of the lesser spotted Daniel Killick on this show fairly soon. We're getting close to internationals, though, aren't we? So he starts sniffing out now. He's like...
Yeah.
He's like Emmanuel Adebayor looking for a new contract, Dan Killick, when it comes to the international.
As long as he's not going to Alpe d'Huez, he might be available.
Well, exactly, yeah, this is it. If he's not performing, pursuing a career in professional cycling, then we might see him. Big thanks to Murph. Thanks to everyone for listening and for all the feedback over the last couple of weeks. That's been fantastic. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever it is you get your podcast, that would be fantastic. And finally, as always, a thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. You can get some great quality coffee at socoffeetrades.co.uk. And I did see as well, I should have looked this up properly, but Scott Otten, the founder of So Coffee Trades, former Ospreys hooker, obviously good friend of the show. He's been nominated for Entrepreneur of the Year, I think, at the Welsh Food and Drink Awards or something like that. So well done, Scott. Recognition definitely well deserved. But we'll be back to chat rugby and who knows, coffee with you next week. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.